This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of Monday, November 29th, 2021, brought to you by Taft. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. At the time that we post this episode, we will be hip deep in the holiday shopping season with a little more urgency than usual to do our business and wrap things up. As we've discussed several times this year, commerce in America has been hampered by supply chain issues, and we're not quite sure how much holiday product will be available over the next month and how quickly store shelves, either physical or virtual, will empty out for good. Experts do expect shoppers to drop a record amount of money this year. The National Retail Federation expects sales for November and December to grow between 8.5 and 10.5% over last year. In total dollars, that would be between $843 billion and $859 billion, and that's excluding money spent at restaurants, gas stations, and auto dealers. This year's forecast exceeds the previous record in 2020, when sales grew 8.2% to $777 billion. Now, if you need a takeaway from this podcast right now, it would be to go do your shopping as soon as possible. But for the rest of this episode, we're going to dial into the details with retailing expert John Talbot. He is the director of the Center for Education and Research in Retailing at the Indiana University Kelley School of Business. In addition to the potential repercussions of the supply chain crisis and what specifically could be in short supply this year, we'll discuss the role that inflation might play in this year's shopping season, why we shouldn't stick up our noses at gift cards, how to avoid cybercrime, and whether there are any blockbuster must-have gifts for this season. Here's our conversation.
I'm pleased to welcome to the podcast John Talbot, Director of the Center for Education and Research in Retailing at the Indiana University's Kelley School of Business. Thank you so much for making time for us as we head into the holidays.
Thank you, Mason.
Now, just as a programming note for folks, this is being recorded on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, but it will not be posted until next Monday. We won't have information about Black Friday stuff, but I will ask you towards the end a little bit about Cyber Monday. But let me start off with just a very broad 50,000 foot question. If it's too broad, certainly we're going to kind of dial into this stuff in more detail later. But how is this holiday shopping season going to be different from 2020, particularly from the shopper standpoint?
Well, more stores are open. I think that's probably the single biggest thing is still have masks on, right? But I suspect that we'll see brick and mortar be a much more significant component of overall retail compared to a year ago. I'm sure that we'll see all the major retailers having big comp increases within their doors. So I'd say that is probably the single biggest change. It's just that the doors will be back open and people will be going in and buying stuff.
Given how tenuous everything seemed last year, was there an unwillingness to spend money during the holidays? Because it seems like that would be the case, but I vaguely remember that it was another record year.
Yeah, last year was, I think the expectation most people had was that given the fact that people had been tied up in their homes with their families and that maybe some sort of a celebration in the sense of consumption, whether it's a service-based consumption or buying something, was an expected outlet last year in Q4. And the forecasts for this year are bordering on crazy. I mean, the National Retail Federation is expecting 8 to 10% increases over last year, which is, you know, typically they forecast 3 to 4% increases. So,
that's dollars spent.
Yeah, that's dollars spent. Uh-huh. And I think it excludes maybe some things like gasoline or, you know, home expenses, but a measure of basically just consumption during Q4. And yeah, they're forecasting, you know, big ump. So apparently, you know, people didn't deplete some of their capability from a year ago and have saved it for now.
Yeah, I was wondering, first off, if there was some pent up gifting that needed to be done?
There's always pent up gifting. I think the question is what's it going to be this year? And a year ago, I would have said people would be spending on mobility during this Q4, but I wonder about that now because we're still reading about so many challenges related to travel and whether it's the airlines not being adequately staffed, kind of dumbing down on some of the services they have, hotels not really being full staff, plastic cups when you're at a luxury hotel. I wonder if people will say, I'm going to give it a little more time before, I take the family somewhere. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I really can't say with any certainty which way that's going to play out.
So those increases that you mentioned, the 5 to 10%, that would include travel expenses.
Yep.
So not sure where that is. How much of this is due to inflation? I mean, that's all we've been talking about for the last month.
Yeah, I don't think that much, Mason. A lot of where we're seeing inflation is in things like just sort of stable goods, gasoline, obviously, food, basic, obviously our heating bills because it's oil-based. I don't think that objects themselves that we might acquire to give us pleasure during Q4 are necessarily going to be more expensive, but I do think there'll be a lack of promotion this year in terms of price promotion, that there's really not as much of an incentive for companies to go out and lower prices when they may not have enough inventory. I know that I've seen the Black Friday sales, and just you have to remember that when these big companies are offering deals on Black Friday, Cyber Monday, those were planned 11 or 12 months ago. They were planned. They started working with their suppliers and they found these ways that they could get special work done for them by suppliers to create a truly valuable TV or something. Those were built and done a long time ago. And so it's not surprising that they're in stock and being promoted by price. But I think once we burn through those, I don't think there's going to be a lot of price discounting off of stuff because it's going to be challenging to replenish.
Now that you mentioned that, I've just been fascinated by this, is why I can walk into Costco on, December the 5th and buy a 45-inch TV for $5. And I always assume that is a loss leader. Am I interpreting that correctly? That it's something just to bring people into the store?
It could be. I think that companies have gotten better and better and better. Like companies like Costco, when they're working with whoever that is that's building that TV for them, it's a plant somewhere in Asia, and they've worked with that company all the time, and they probably buy other things from them that are non-related to Black Friday. So they go in and they say, we need you to push hard on this, and you're going to cut your margins. We're going to cut our margins. Not that we're asking you to lose money on it, but we want to basically be sure we build tremendous value in and pass along to consumers. And you have to remember, Costco is their whole modus operandi is to find things that you need and mark them up as little as possible before giving them to you.
Well, let me ask you about the thing that everyone, I'm sure, is asking you about, which is supply chain. I think there's a widespread assumption that products are going to be in short supply because of all the supply chain problems that we've been talking about for the last 18 months. Will it be harder to find the gifts that we want? Will they be in shorter supply?
So I don't know if you saw, but the CEO Target, CEO Walmart, both stated in their recent earnings calls that our shelves are full. We've used our incredible power, within the supply chain itself to do workarounds to make sure that we got our stuff. So they've sort of stated, we'll have it. I still think that what's going to be different this time is that it's going to be challenging to replenish. So I once was a CEO of a retail store, and the chairman of the board asked me, do we have the right inventory for fourth quarter? And I said, of course not, because you're never right. it's inconceivable that we would be perfect. It's just not possible. It's too multivariate. There's too many things going on. So everybody's inventory is wrong. And there's going to be certain things that they thought they needed in this quantity, but it turns out they needed double that or they needed half that. In maybe a more normal environment, there might be some ability to adjust that in both directions. Maybe you could turn down some of the things that you might have a little too much of, turn up some of the ones that you could have. But I don't think there's going to be replenish. I think we really have seen the remarkable work that these giant retailers and their partners have done of being able to sort of instantaneously give us anything we want from around the world and just have it magically be there on shelves. But the logistics behind that are daunting. And the poor retailers have been dealing not only with the pandemic, but if you have to remember before that, they had these things called tariffs that were being randomly imposed, you know, with no real thought behind it, that were causing tons of disruption. So the last 3 years for retailers and their suppliers have just been a constant battle. And I think we'll see this year that, you know, maybe we'll realize that how efficient these things are and realize the miraculousness of sort of always having what we want on demand when we want it, because it probably won't happen this year.
So when you say replenishment, you mean like maybe mid-December, like we won't have a second wave of product coming in to refill the shelves?
Yeah. So a lot of times companies, you know, get out there pretty early, start testing things, you know, getting some response, and then they might have set up abilities with some of their suppliers, depending on the types of items. There's certain things that obviously lend themselves to faster replenish than others. They're not going to build more winter coats. You know, the number they have is the number they have. But other things, it's possible to replenish. But I think it's going to be more challenging to do that this year than maybe in the past. So companies that have, say, facial creams, lotions, you know, stuff for personal care, a lot of times that stuff is manufactured in the U.S. And so it could be a possibility, like Bath and Body Works, for example, has a supply facility in Columbus, Ohio. But my guess is even that supply facility is not operating as it would have normally. They're probably struggling to fill the roles that they need more so than they have in the past. I mean, maybe they've been successful, but I still think there's just the seamless kind of capability is going to be, if they can pull it off, God knows retailers have done incredible things before. So
what about products coming from China? That seems to be the choke point for, for a lot of supply chain problems.
I agree with you. I was talking to a couple of interesting things. So one, I talked to a major Midwest retailer the other day, and she noted that there was a trend on Pinterest that had, I think, moms making beautiful little stars out of wire hangers that you can put on your door. And at this particular retailer, they were completely sold out of wire hangers because of this trend. And I think the wire hangers are made in China, so I don't think they can get any more.
I've got 10,000 wire hangers in my
closet. Yeah, but we should get them and sell them. I've got a bunch up in my closet as well. So maybe wire hangers, they're $5 each now out of my closet. So
I got to get on eBay right now.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But I thought that was crazy, and it shows you the capriciousness of consumer demand, and then also just that when it's gone, it's gone. And the other one that I heard about, and it speaks to your point of China, is I had a student said, you know what, bizarre, I'm going to Target to restock my shelves for food I like, ramen noodles. Can't get them. Guess where they're made? China. Almost all the ramen noodles in the United States are packaged in China. So
now, are most toys still made in China?
I bet you a lot of them are. Uh-huh.
And I mean, when I'm looking for stuff for my six-year-old, do I need to be especially careful to get what I can find?
It depends on the child, but if you need to get it, get it. Don't wait for the price to get better, I would say, because if you're going to have tears and crying, you know, is that worth saving $10? No.
Okay, let's take a quick break to digest this information and hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
Taft, today's modern law firm. With more than 625 attorneys across 11 offices, we provide solutions to the business issues facing middle market and emerging companies alike. We do this through a highly collaborative and inclusive team approach. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast. We're talking with retailing expert John Talbot of the Indiana University Kelley School of Business about what to expect from this year's holiday shopping season.
How soon should I be done with shopping?
Oh, as soon as possible, unless you just love it.
No.
I was talking to somebody the other day, though, that does love shopping, and we were just thinking how interesting it might be to go through some of these major retailers, you know, the week before Christmas and just see what's missing. Like, go, wow, they're out of that. They're out of that. Just because I have a feeling it's going to be some odd thing. So it might be that you would want to, you know, save that opportunity to go into some stores until you give a chance just to see what could be out. We also wondered about, you know, shopping local. And we were musing on, you know, is it easier for locals this year? It's probably not as tough as last year, but there's still going to be out of stock situations with local retailers. So I've been advocating, especially for smaller local retailers, to sell those darn gift cards. And, you know, that captures the cash for you and then gives them the ability to maybe replenish, because you can imagine companies that, like, we have a little store down here called Good for Cooks, Goods for Cooks, that has wonderful assortment of things for the kitchen, but they don't have thousands of each item. You know, they probably have three or four of the shirataki mushroom cutting knife or whatever it is, the special thing that you have to have. When that's gone, it's probably gone. And so they have to, you know, but they can sell the gift card and you come back and get your shirataki mushroom cutting knife after the holidays.
I wanted to ask you about COVID. Our numbers are trending back up in Indiana for sure. I'm assuming at least in some parts of the United States. Are you hearing any rumblings yet from retailers, any anxiety or concerns about another surge as we, you know, head into the last couple of weeks before Christmas?
I can't say that I've heard that from retailers. I mean, I think broader public health officials are obviously have some concerns, but I think retailers, I don't see that as kind of being a cause for concern with the retailers. I don't think they feel like, you know, like last year we might have imagined that we were endangering people's lives by being open. I think one of the things that's been that we've begun to know about COVID is that if we're vaccinated, the probability of a severe infection is very, very low, and our treatment protocols are a lot better.
And one other question I forgot to ask about supply. Because Indianapolis is such a major distribution and logistics hub for the country, or certainly the Midwest, are shoppers here going to have any better luck finding items than elsewhere in the country? Are we in the catbird seat because so much stuff passes through here, or is it just that there's a lot of stuff passing through here?
I think it's B. I think it's what you said. It's remarkable what Central Indiana has become in terms of a distribution hub. And a lot of it has to do, we've got a great airport, you know, pretty ease of setting up a business here. And then also I think we're within like a 2-hour flight of 2/3 of the American population or something like that. But yes, I think those items that are passing through are already have tags on them that say they're going to a certain place.
Now, last year, it was pretty obvious by this point that anything related to Baby Yoda was going to be hot. Is there anything similar this year in terms of demand?
Oh, I've been hearing that. I wish I knew what it was, Mason, because I would make them. I've been thinking about bringing Pet Rocks back. I'm not so sure if you remember those or not. But,
oh, yeah, I do.
You know, I would love to bring Pet Rocks back. I think we could have vintage Pet Rocks now, if you would, where we would bring them back, you know, in old packaging. But that could be fun. But yeah, I have a hard time, you know, picking any one thing. And I use the reference to Tickle Me Elmo of this year, but that takes me back so far in time that people don't know that reference anymore.
Well, let's talk about Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yeah, exactly. I can't think of any one particular thing. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm looking forward to hearing the stories around what happens this Friday and on Monday, and we'll start to get some insights as to where consumers' minds are and what sort of fickle things they have up their sleeves for us this year.
I'm assuming that cyber criminals are lurking, as they probably do every year, and are ready to pounce somewhere. I think I got dinged as part of the Target hack several years ago. Do you have any tips for avoiding cybercrime?
Get a password manager and change your passwords often would probably be the single biggest thing. And then also be careful about, obviously, you know, don't write down card numbers and give it to people. If you're buying online, if a site looks sketchy, it probably is. You know, these sites that have myriads of things. I remember last year there was an Indianapolis woman that was cheated out of a couple hundred bucks worth of stuff. And you know, in hindsight, after she bought it, she goes, I knew that seemed too good to be true. And it was. Look for Apple Pays, you know, other things like that that show credibility. And then just, you know, avoid saying enough, you know, if you're calling to place something, and, you know, just never write down your card numbers or anything like that. One thing I saw, Mason, that's interesting. I don't know if you've saw some of the issues that are happening out in California where there's these hit and runs on luxury stores.
That's a whole
new form of theft that I haven't seen in a long time that's manifesting itself, where apparently it's a very planned, like almost a flash mob of people descending on a luxury retail store, crashing it, going in, grabbing stuff and getting the heck out of there before a law enforcement entity can do anything about it. So Fortunately, we haven't seen that in the Midwest so far.
What is the value of that? They just turn around and sell that on the secondary market?
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Probably you find it on eBay later or something. I mean,
so the bailout gift is usually the gift card. I really want to avoid doing that this year, but I could be in a bad position.
I never understood that. I mean, to me, gift cards are fantastic. I mean, let's face it, what I'd most like to have is cash. Like, you know, if I'm going to have my aunt so-and-so or sister so-and-so buy me that kitchen utensil that does something completely unnecessary and go, oh, that's great. So exciting. Or they could get me a $100 gift card for Drizzly, which I like that a lot better. So I think gift cards are fantastic, and they're a great way to capture consumer demand this year. And particularly, I'm a total advocate for smaller retailers, whether it's a restaurant retailer or a service-based retailer, but try to push gift cards to, you know, it's money you get to put in the bank right now, and you can disperse the services or the products later.
Now, remind me about Cyber Monday. Again, this podcast will be posted on Cyber Monday, the 29th. Mm-hmm. Remind me, how much is spent on Cyber Monday? I forget, like, what percentage of all holiday shopping takes place on that day, or what's the metric for that?
Mason, I want to say it's 10% and it's grown, but I could be off on that. We need to just go look at the National Retail Federation data, which they'll have some forecasts on it. It's a big day, but we have to remember the origins of it, which most people aren't even old enough to realize anymore. But in the old days, the only place you had high bandwidth, and by high, I mean pretty terrible, but by today's, what today would be terrible, but it was good enough that you could actually shop on the internet at work. And so the Monday after Thanksgiving, a lot of people went to the office, fired up their computers where they had high bandwidth connection to the internet, and they bought stuff, and nothing got done that Monday morning. And of course, most people have at least pretty good internet today, and we've done a lot better way at crushing down image size and other ways to make sites easier to get to your home through your narrow pipe. It's just not the day that it once was, I think, in terms of, there's no reason really for it to exist anymore other than it does.
Oh, okay. So it's a holiday that but it's a special day that we kind of created, and now it is not as special as it was before.
Well, I mean, there was a reason. There actually was a physical reason why it existed, you know, why the phenomena was happening. And now that's not really the reason why it happened, but still, especially e-com companies, I think, because, you know, there used to be this bifurcation between e-com sellers that were pure play e-commerce companies that didn't sell anything offline, like Amazon, for example. And others. Today, almost everybody has a physical footprint as well. And so, you know, Target has Cyber Monday deals, even though they also have Black Friday deals because of their stores, or they have Black Friday deals online. So there's not this bifurcation anymore between digital commerce and physical commerce. They're really all blended together. And so again, other than just they are up against Cyber Monday for last year with special deals, which means they want to duplicate those sales numbers for this year. So they're going to have the same sorts of deals again to try to drive the sales numbers that they need, you know, because they're publicly traded companies and in most cases, and, you know, they want to tell Wall Street that we had a much better Cyber Monday this year than we did last year.
And still, as a researcher, I'm assuming early next week is going to be a really important time.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
For data, data, data.
Yeah,
what
I'm
do you
excited.
Expect to know maybe by next Tuesday about the rest of the season?
I don't know what we'll know about the rest, but we will. Well, we'll probably get some sense. We'll have a really good sense about how much is done. You know, there's large overall numbers that are, you know, fairly predictable in terms of the total amount of the spend, right? And so we're going to see how much of that got filled up over this week and Friday and then through Monday. And I think probably most of the interesting discussion there will be are how much have consumers gotten done already? And, you know, that expectation that maybe they'll go out early because things might be scarce. I think we'll be able to see, you know, relative to total expectation, what percent of the season is done at this time versus last year. And then be able to get some sense of whether people are shopping early or not. We also should get some sense about the types of items that are being bought. I believe Adobe publishes pretty good data around types of items that are being sold. So we'll probably see if there is that Tickle Me Elmo or Cabbage Patch Kids or Pet Rock that we've been searching for. Maybe we'll get a sense if there's something out there like that next Tuesday.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much for making the time here right before Thanksgiving. I really appreciate your insights.
No problem, Ace. It's fun talking to you, buddy.
My thanks again to John Talbot. In the latest issue of IBJ, you can find a Q&A with John in which he addresses some of these same issues. And before you get on with the rest of your week, I want to point out a few other strong stories from this issue. First up, Susan Orr explains how Indianapolis area companies hope to take advantage of the big influx of federal infrastructure dollars from huge corporations like Cummins and Allison Transmission to smaller ones like 120 Water and BCA Environmental Consultants. Also in this week's issue, Leslie Bonilla Muniz expands on plans by Indy Parks to add another 90 acres of public green space. And Leslie has an update on how Indigo is moving ahead with the next two legs of its massive bus rapid transit project after a messy state legislative session and pandemic-related problems threw a wrench in the timeline. Again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say it is quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 pocket change per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.